Welcome to the California Wireless Association podcast. We are proud to say that CAWA has been advancing the wireless industry, helping businesses grow, fostering connections between people, and impacting lives through the charities we support for over 10 years. We'll be coming to you bi-weekly with new topics, education, and lively discussions. Let's dive right into today's topic. Please welcome your host, John Coombs.
Hi, this is episode 2 of 2 parts with Jonathan Kramer. When I interviewed him, there was just too much content to have in one episode. So if you have not listened to part 1, then it immediately precedes this episode on your podcast platform. Right. Now, I certainly don't want to get in a debate with you because I will lose, but I wonder if this is a fair, I wonder how you react to this, that, you know, for at least my career, especially back when I was doing a lot of new site development or, you know, zoning myself, kind of had a bell curve of cities. And from our perspective, you know, this city, one city would be easy. On the far end of the, you know, two standard deviations away from the mean, and other cities would be on the opposite side. But most cities were kind of in the middle, and we worked with them. And before all these rules, and we kind of came to compromises and agreements. Is it a fair statement, or that the tough cities, the really tough cities, maybe some of your clients, kind of ruined it for the cities in some ways on this home rule issue, or would you dispute that it was going to happen anyway, or maybe just react to my theory?
Well, my reaction is that there are local issues that are picked upon by the wireless carriers in promoting legislation, promoting process changes. Generally, the cities that we've had the privilege of working for have created tough but reasonable regulations. I mean, one of the things, you know, as a member of the CAWA board, is that when we're dealing with a local jurisdiction to modify an ordinance, one of the things that we always do as a firm is to reach out to CAWA and say, let your members know about this. Because we think that the best forms of regulation are the ones where those who are regulated are the ones who are also, we're making sure they have a voice in the process. And over the years, as we've created regulations, the industry has tried, sometimes successfully, sometimes not, to change the narrative. And a lot of it depends on the evolution of technology. But in terms of, are there outliers at both sides? Absolutely. There have been some jurisdictions that have had processes that, as an outsider looking in, we can't fathom how they got there. and frankly there are consultants who work for local jurisdictions, that some consultants, I want to be very specific, some consultants who work for jurisdictions who are not constrained by following or recommending following the law or regulations.
Right.
Yeah, on the other side of that, John, is we also deal with reps coming into City Hall who make amazing proclamations about what a local government's allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. I'm pleased to say that the people that work with you are very highly regarded by the local governments. And I mean this seriously.
Thank you.
You do a very good training job. But, you know, right now there's such a sucking sound. The wireless industry trying to find bodies to carry permits that people who would never be considered as a professional industry are still hired just because they can move a permit from point A to point B. So it's training on both sides. It's training to make sure the jurisdiction knows what the rules are, and it's training to make sure that the other end of the bell curve for the carrier reps know what they should be saying, and really what is going to be said, what they'll say that will disadvantage their clients, the carriers.
That could probably be a whole podcast right there, but I'll bite my tongue on that. I'll bite my tongue on that one. But if, you know, back to what you're saying about how you guys reach when you're working on an ordinance or you're filing a brief of some kind or whatever, you engage the carriers. Don't surprise them. I mean, it's like anything else. If you want something, if you want a good policy, you got to engage all stakeholders. You know, I've seen cities, sadly, not your cities, who like spring a draft ordinance in front of their planning commission with no industry input. And that doesn't help anybody because sometimes the industry folk, you know, they've got the knowledge and, you know, the fair dealers in the consultancy side can tell a city, oh, that was tried over here. You might want to, you know, stay away from that. So I think we all need to collaborate on these things. We're not adversaries. We're all professionals. We just have different clients, right?
Well, yeah. And just I have to make one small correction.
Okay.
We engage the industry when we're doing regulatory work. Uh-huh. Needless to say, we don't engage the industry when we're suing the FCC, for example.
Fair enough.
Interestingly, I know from past history is that a large segment of the population who's interested in this topic will find this podcast and listen to it. So I want to make sure that they are not misled into believing that we consult with the industry before we sue.
Fair enough. Thanks for the clarification. No, so you touched on another hot issue, or at least another issue that is what you touched on, generators, site hardening is you know, it's a big thing. It's been big for some carriers for a longer period of time than others, but it seems to be really heating up. So with regard to the generators, I do know that California enacted some legislation. I think it went into effect on January 1st, if I do remember. But maybe, what's your take on the whole site hardening endeavor, how cities are reacting to the flood of generator ad permit apps, applications, and how are your landlord clients also reacting to these requests?
Oh, boy, talk about a can of worms. Let's try and open this can and let the worms out.
Okay.
In a relatively orderly way. Number one, how about local governments? We'll do that before we talk about landlords.
All right.
The local governments recognize that one of the biggest problems is that for a fully camouflaged site, uh-huh. a generator now under 2421 doesn't have to be camouflaged.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's problematic. And under 2421, a carrier can come into a local government and get permits without even the landlord being aware of it. I'll get to that a little bit more. Hmm. 2421 does not require the filing of an LOA at the time the application is filed. 2421 put the number of restrictions on process of applications, but 2421 also has a element that requires that the site be in compliance when the application comes in. And not surprisingly, we find that somewhere in the 40% range of sites that we review at the time that an application comes in are not compliant with their previous permit. Mm. That immediately takes them out of 2421. That gets to a larger issue about carriers doing unpermitted modifications, which is a huge issue for both the local governments and the carriers, because when you do unpermitted modifications, you lose your 2421 rights, you lose your 6409 rights. Mm-hmm. And in one extreme case, a carrier came to a city of ours and wanted to do a 6409 modification. Mm-hmm. We determined, and they agreed, that they had modified the site without permits, and then later came back to the city and said, guess what? And we said, what? They said, well, the site's back to what it should be. Oh, well, and where's your permit for that modification? Oh, we didn't get it. We just returned the site back to its prior condition. Okay, so you're trying to say that two wrongs create a legal right? No, it doesn't.
Yeah, because the building code could change or something else. I mean, yeah, I get it.
Well, you can't make two modifications. It's not like you have a plus modification and a minus modification. You have two modifications. Now, let's get to landlords.
Okay.
Because this is a really interesting issue under 2421. Landlords are being besieged by the carriers to do short amendments to add somewhere in the range of 100 square feet, sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less. Mm-hmm. The industries settle on a magic number in the range of $400 to $500 per month for that add-on, regardless of what the PSF rate was for the rest of the site. Mm-hmm. And landlords are waking up and finding that the carriers are already bringing onto the property portable generators. Mm-hmm. One company in particular is notorious, if not famous, for doing this. And it's really so detrimental when carriers jump the gun when they go back to the landlord and they say, well, you know what, here's the amendment. It's been approved by the county. It's been approved by the city. Oh, really? So it's creating some problems. And from the landlord's perspective, most landlords are happy to rent additional space. That's the business that they're in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the concern about having a diesel belching standby power generator, perhaps next to an apartment building, perhaps in an area that could be subject to fires, is a problem. So the industry's push for 2421 has really, in some ways, hurt them in terms of their dealings with the landlords. And then their post-2421 actions of like dropping generators on. And by the way, when the generators come on the property, the wheels come off of the trailer. So you can't even move it. And we're telling landlords, and landlords are charging penalty rents, substantial penalty rents for basically doing that without landlord permission. So, you know, some good's in hardening, some bad's in hardening. I think all of us think that the idea of hardening and making the networks more secure against commercial power failures is a good idea. Mm-hmm. But like everything else, it's how it's implemented that also impacts the value of the whole process.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I mean, we've processed a number of them. I haven't been aware of those kinds of tactics, to be honest with you. So maybe I just haven't, has it happened yet? I hope it doesn't, but you know, I generally am kind of one that let's do it right the first time. And that's what I advise my clients, and you know, save yourself heartache later. So let's move on to another interesting topic, which is something I should have jingled you about a while ago when you know, with regard to 5G is again, you know, every site practically in every network is being modified to A5G technology, and that's therefore, you know, the permit applications are flooding in. Yet the public reaction has been mixed, and some of it has been dismissed as, you know, I'm using air quotes right now, tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists and whatnot. So you represent both, again, cities and landlords. What is your advice to your clients when would they bring up the RF safety issue when it comes to 5G? And could you, without getting overly technical, as I know you can, you know, boil it down. sorry.
Excuse me, my left side and my left right side of the face got slapped at the same time. So go ahead, John.
No, seriously. I mean, I've seen you, and to your credit, you in public settings, you've actually parked people, both city officials and the public, when you hear nonsense. So I hope people realize that you are a fair dealer regarding this. And, you know, I think, frankly, a fair dealer on all topics, at least of my experience. But on this particular one, and I know it's touchy, but I mean, how do you handle what you might think is uninformed reaction to the perception of safety issues regarding 5G?
You know, interestingly, I probably would have had a different conversation with you had we recorded this yesterday.
Hmm.
But we're recording this today, August 16th.
Correct.
And this morning, the D.C. Court of Appeals, released a major decision that said essentially that the FCC did not follow the proper process or an adequate process to make its determinations about the most current set of RF safety rules. So the issue of RF safety and preemption is tied together. So RF safety and preemption come back from an order from Congress to the FCC in the Telecom Act of 1995-96. And they said basically create a national set of rules, and the commission did. And over the years, there have been slight tweaks to it, but a major tweak process was completed by the FCC last year that resulted in new rules that were made effective in May of this year. They didn't change a lot, but they changed some of the procedures and processes for determining RF compliance. Now, the court decision that was released this morning, and this is a preliminary view, and like everything else I'm talking about with you on this podcast, it's not the position of any one of our particular clients, but it's my assessment of what I read as an attorney and as a RF engineer. The court said this morning that the FCC has to go back and do a much deeper process in looking, for example, at the non-thermal effects that are claimed by some to be caused by wireless. They have to follow more closely the Administrative Procedures Act in terms of how you develop rules. The commission really has not done enough work to justify the rules that are in place, the ones that were adopted as a result of the closure of the last process. So what does all of this mean? Well, the rules are at this point still in effect. There is no change to the rules. And as to most sites, I don't think we're going to see a change in the process, at least for the immediate future. We'll see what the FCC does in response to this. I expect that they're going to file a request for the Supreme Court to review this decision. There's no appeal directly. They'll probably appeal to the full circuit for a hearing first, and then it'll probably make its way up to a request for the Supreme Court to hear it. At this point, the rules as they exist and have existed essentially since roughly 2000 talk about RF effects on people. They talk about the heating effects. Now, whether the commission's going to go back and do some work to look at non-thermal effects, I think the court's made it clear that the court wants to see more evidence on the record regarding the FCC's decision not to consider non-thermal effects.
Educate this this pure zoning manager guy you're talking to. What are examples of non-thermal effects?
Some people, and I can talk about my own experiences dealing with people who have talked about non-thermal effects. They can talk about how they can feel RF. It's not just an issue of whether the RF is causing the heating effect that is documented, well documented in the record, but other effects, insomnia, causing insomnia, whether that's true or not.
Got it.
That's out of my expertise, but that's what the district court wants the FCC to go back and look at. The whole process of how they came up with their decision to end the last review of the RF safety rules without going through a formal rulemaking, but simply doing a declaratory judgment and releasing that, the declaratory ruling.
Right. Okay. Well, and just out of curiosity, so it looks like the plaintiff was Environmental Health Trust. What was their basic claim? Do you have you absorbed the case yet?
You know, I have, and basically they talked about the fact that the plaintiffs in the case, and there were several, but they talked about the fact that they didn't believe that the FCC followed the right process to end up with the result it ended up with. Basically, they said that the commission did not provide answers to the hundreds of commenters that were involved in the case and didn't explain why they chose one approach over another. That's a very formal process under the Administrative Procedures Act, the APA. Mm-hmm. So the court said basically, you've got rules, but you haven't justified how you got there. You've got to go back and do more.
Got it. Well, I have one more question for you, Jonathan, because we're running over, and I think this will probably end up being a two-parter, but just thought of it, actually. I hadn't really prepared for this question, but, you know, my wife works in municipal government, and, you know, over the last year and a half, you know, reacting to CARES Act funding that's been coming into cities, and with, you know, the potential that the House will pass a version of the Senate's infrastructure bill, there's so much talk about lots and lots and lots of money going towards broadband and whatnot. And, you know, have you already been talking to your clients about if there's any grants that go directly to cities, what they might use it for if that becomes a reality?
You know, interestingly, the industry is historically generally opposed grants to local governments for this. They've wanted to make sure that they're the ones who are, in fact, building out these broadband networks. Now, I want to make it very clear that the local governments that I deal with are proponents of connectivity, of broadband, of making sure that people are able to talk and stay connected. Mm-hmm. We see the jurisdictions moving in that direction because, frankly, it's like the railroads of the 1800s when they bypassed a town. The town certainly got smaller if it didn't blow away altogether. Mm-hmm. And jurisdictions are recognizing the fact that this is an increasingly important tool as part of their communities. Now, would jurisdictions like to be able to provide these services? Well, sure, because the jurisdictions are not in the for-profit business. They want to make sure the best services are out there. But I think you're going to find a lot of pushback, as has already happened in some states, where the industry's representatives have said, you know, we're the best ones to do it, not the local governments.
Sure.
I think we'll see some more of that as the money becomes available.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. Well, I mean, you know, we could probably keep going. It's always fun to talk to you, and it's been too long. Obviously, COVID has something to do with that. But, you know, I guess there's always a telephone.
Well, I'm gonna interrupt you for a second.
Yeah.
Because you failed to ask me an important question.
Oh, I did now. What did I fail to ask you?
Well, you failed to ask me about Kalwa.
Okay. Go on.
Well, as I'm sure you know, I've actually been a strong proponent of including Kalwa in discussions, and that much is clear. Mm-hmm. But I was a charter member of Kalwa, and I encourage my local governments to be members of Kalwa because, frankly, we do better when we talk as opposed to when we argue. And Kalwa has provided a forum at various times, and I'd like to see it get back to that, of more discussions between the industry and those who regulate it. So I'm very happy to declare my continuing membership in the organization because I believe in what I just said, which is that the reason I'm here talking to you now, because this is a Kalwa podcast.
Right. I appreciate that.
We do better when we talk, and I'm pleased to be one of the people who has an opportunity to talk.
And listen. No, yes, I concur. We touched on that collaboration. And I know our current president, Scott Longhurst, is a big proponent of that. I know you've got a strong relationship with him as well. And so we appreciate it. And, you know, we don't always have to agree, but we don't have to be disagreeable, as they say. So, well, we're going to wrap it up, Jonathan, Dr. Kramer. And, and I really appreciate you coming on. I'm sure that what you have to say will be very it'll be very stimulating for at least some of the folks that I know, especially on the zoning side. Any parting words aside from your zeal for Kahlua?
Well, my parting words are the same thing you probably just said before, which is let's keep talking.
Right.
Number two is let's collaborate instead of clash. Mm-hmm. In terms of legislative initiatives, let's be nice to each other. Even though the goals may be different, we can do it in a respectable and respectful manner.
Well, I think that's good advice for a lot of things, including our politics. So thanks for those words, Jonathan. So with that, folks, I want to give a quick shout out to my friends at the Northwest Wireless Association. On August 12th, I was fortunate to be up in Seattle for my first in-person mixer, and gosh, well, certainly since pre-COVID. And so if any of you guys are listening out there, it was a great event. They did a neat service project instead of just, you know, mingling. It was a backpack project for disadvantaged youth that was sort of an assembly line kind of thing. And that's great. That's consistent with, you know, Kahlua giving back as well. So on that note, thank you everyone, and be safe out there. Take care. Bye.
Thank you for joining us. We'll see you back here in 2 weeks. Until then, for more information, visit kahlua.org. That's www.kahlua.org.